Today's episode is brought to you by Bululu Studios. Bululu Studios is a small event space located in Savannah, Georgia. It is the perfect location for MFA thesis shows. For more information, please visit bululustudios.com. That is BULULUstudios.com.
Hi, hello, this is Kevin. Thank you for listening to The Strand. Last week, I was able to spend some time with a few working artists in Miami, Florida. I have titled this four-part series, The Miami Minutes, and it contains conversations with Juan Enriquez, Roxana Barba, Carrie Phillips, and Yi Chin Hsi. Today's episode is a conversation that I had with Yi Chin Hsi. Originally from Taiwan, she is an artist and curator based out of Miami, Florida. Learn more about her endeavors by following her on Instagram at Yi Chi Say Project. Stay up to date with my own work by following me on Instagram at Kevin Will Paint. We're here at the Spinello Projects in Miami, Florida, and I just wanted to thank you for your time.
No, thank you for your time as well, for taking precious time interviewing me.
Awesome.
Spending time with me.
Is there a way for people to contact you online?
Yeah, I think the best way will be through my Instagram. I'm figuring out a better and easier handle to remember. But right now it's at YCHSIEH Projects.
From my world, from where I have met you, it's through Instagram.
Yes.
And mutual friends. And I know that you're heavy into the art community in Miami and come from the perspective of a curator, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about that and what's exciting to you about that component?
It's a lot of things, I think, to cover. Mm-hmm. I think this summer is going to be my 7th year in Miami.
Right on.
And
did you come from?
I moved to Miami from Taiwan, Taipei.
Sweet.
Directly. Yeah. At the beginning, for my grad school at Florida International University.
Great.
And before that, I've only visited US once. And, somehow destiny and things happened at the time brought me here. I have no idea what Miami is. I only know Miami from CSI.
Yeah.
With that really old show, or right. Bat Boy, like typical Hollywood things. So yeah, when I first came here, it took me quite some time to adjust lifestyles, like driving everywhere. A lot of strong Latin and Spanish influence. Even till today, I consider myself extremely lucky of meeting amazing people in Miami.
Yeah.
It's a very vibrant city, fast growing. A lot of great artists, gallery, curators. And I've been here for 7 years, and I feel like the art community has been nothing but very accepting and welcoming.
Great.
Yeah, and I started really curating my first show here in 2018 with my good friend and artist Eddie Arroyo at the time for a small solo show at one of FIU's offsite. Yeah, so starting from there, I start to really value the collaboration with artists. As I mentioned earlier, I'm not from an art historic background. And when I was in Taiwan, I have a BFA for visual designs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so when approaching an idea, I like to think about what exhibition can look like and what kind of collaboration or fun things that along the process when we build a project together with the artists.
Yeah.
And from there, I started really seeing how collaboration or collaborative projects, how we can approach that from a curatorial perspective. So a lot of my works before is really heavily on a lot of discussions or collaboration between the artists that were showing with me at the time, or sometimes we do maybe brainstorm or come up with our work specifically for an idea.
What mediums do you seek?
Everything, I would say. Like, I like to see like the art's work or the artist themselves. It doesn't really matter a specific medium.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, I often ask was asked a lot of questions like this. It was, oh, as a curator, what do you curate? And I curate art, you know. I like focusing on contemporary art and living and working artists.
A little bit of digital media too, right?
Digital media too as well. I've shown different video works, multimedia artists. I found that interesting. It's just a different type of medium.
Mm-hmm. Some work at Vizcaya, no?
Besides working as independent curator, I also worked in museums for several years,
cool.
As well as commercial galleries and private foundation as well. So I worked at Frost Art Museum, the one located in the MMC campus of FIU, as their digitization coordinator for about two years. And then after that, moving on, I was at Vizcaya's digital initiative team for a special project that they have at a time. That was during the COVID time, so museum were shut down, and everybody's kind of exploring that digital realm in the art. You remember those like 3D map, or like we were trying to navigate how would be the best way to check a museum out or check
online digitally.
Exactly.
Right, I'm with you. Yes.
Yeah, but instead of focusing on building that is probably more technical, and what I was doing in Vizcaya is to focusing on their digital programming and brainstorm how we can brought these archives in a historical museum that was, there's like tens of thousands of letters, telegrams that are very interesting about the history of actually building Miami, mm-hmm. and exploring Miami in like early 1920s, late 1800s, of how people move here and want to build something and build an estate. So at the time, our programming is really focusing on how do we digitize these and come up with programs and well, nicely curated online so people can explore a different side of a historical museum.
I used to spend time when I was going to the University of Miami drawing. We would go to Vizcaya and they had us drawing everything. There's probably drawings somewhere in my house of every part of Vizcaya.
Yeah. I love working there. It's such a great, just the museum itself brings a lot of, for me, it's a lot of peaceful feelings. And also it's a great team. The digital initiative team at the time, for me, I think it's very precious for a historical museum or even art museum to willing to have the budget and that time to dedicate to something that it's an online programming that I would say like you need extra effort for an institutions to dedicate to that.
And finance.
Yeah. It's very expensive doing digital stuff. Mm-hmm. I learned that through going through different projects with private foundations and institutions like this. Like, you would think a museum should have that, but it's a lot of financial dedication.
It's tricky.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the Spinello Project.
Spinello Project is also my other side of my art practice, I would say. I've been working with the gallery since early 2022. It has been a very interesting change for me as well. Coming before working with Spinello, I have always been in nonprofit worlds, like either with smaller organizations, artist residency, or museum, as we mentioned. So coming into a gallery, or closer to the art market, you're under the same umbrella, but a very different world. Yeah, I remember it took me several months to really adjust the fast pace of how gallery things like would turn over.
Yeah.
Or, going to art fairs, doing regular shows, a lot of different perspective to consider when we curate shows. Yeah, even till today, I'm still learning a lot from this profession.
What are some of the artists that are on show, on view right now at Spinello?
Right now we have Anthony Guiclea and Chris Knight solo exhibitions.
Mm-hmm. What kind of work is that?
So it's all mostly queer figurative paintings.
Okay.
Yes.
So we talked a little bit about some of the things that you've been doing in the past, and I think you just had a show that just closed recently. Can you explain more about that?
Yeah, I just had a project called The Dinner Party that closed in early February.
Mm-hmm.
This is a project that I got an Ellie's Award as well as a Wavemaker Grant locally in Miami for. I've been planning this for like over a year, and I was really excited to finally have to debut that.
Where was it at?
So this project, I found an amazing, also a residency and exhibition space called The Collective 62, running by Nina Cyril, also a great Miami-based artist. It's not too far away. It's in Little River. They have several studio spaces and really supportive of women artists as well. And it's a very community-oriented space. And for exhibition-wise, it's not a traditional white cube space that you showed in gallery or museums. There's a kitchen in the middle, and that's what I was looking for. So this project, The Dinner Party, comes from my hobby of just like looking or enjoying great food. Yeah, so that's something I always like to do, to find fun food, enjoying the food together. And, you know, as Taiwanese, like eating is such a big thing in our culture.
Family and community, yeah, and bringing everybody together.
I think in general, in most of the cultures or different countries, eating is always a way of bonding together, whether with friends or family. But I think specifically in Taiwan, when we don't really greet people as, how are you? How do you do? We ask them, have you eaten?
Okay.
Like, did you eat today? Yeah. What did you eat? That's such a big part of us as a friend, or just greeting each other and sending our cares and love. Mm-hmm. And so from that idea, I've been thinking of how many like great dining experiences I have with my friends. And I've always had these tab or Instagram feed that I follow artists on, using either food as a way of, as a form of their art practice, or their art practice involve a lot of context about food.
Yeah.
So I just like have a tab called food art. Yeah. And then later I was like, I want to make this into an interesting experience where with a smaller group of audience can really be intimate and have a smaller conversation, but deep conversation with the artists about these food. I've did several studio visits with different artists. So with a dinner party, with the timeline I have, I scale it down for about four artists, all from different places. I work with Chris Friday, based in both Miami and Atlanta, Georgia. Mm-hmm. And I work with Kitty Routh, based in Chicago, Anika Chang, based in New York, and Samantha Rosado, based in North Carolina. So all of them approach their art practice with food at some certain points. Some use food as their medium and materials. Some actually like do soft sculptures with food, and some have photographs.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and all of them have an interesting perspective on seeing their relationship with food and what does that mean. And it's through these studio visits, several studio visits with each artist, I know like their story, and I feel close to them because it's all about shared memories that we have with our friends and family. And
around the table.
Exactly, around the table. And so I wanted to create that kind of exhibition experience, focusing heavily on programming, but not just by showing up their food and their art.
Yeah.
So on the opening night, I have that Kitty Routh and Anika here in Miami. We have a toast with Kitty's sculpture that's very temporary, I would say. She flew in with her partner and then cast champagne glasses with sugar in 2 days. Wow. So all the guests attending the opening can have a sugar glass to toast, and then they'll melt away,
right, vanishes
with time. Yeah, and then I think that's part of their practice as well, is to, you know, discuss about like these time things, and also like what sugar and food means and connect with our body. Yeah. And the second day we have a workshop with Anika Chang, where she used a lot of crocheting and soft sculpture to her work is called the dim sum. So it will be, it's a set of a dim sum, everything, but everything is in crochet.
Okay.
Yeah, so with her workshop, we actually all crochet dumplings together by making dumplings together. And that's a really big thing in Chinese culture.
Definitely.
Of, yeah, making food around the table and then sharing it afterwards. And for the closing, we have an artist talk with Chris Friday and Samantha Rosado with a small group of audience, about 25 people. Mm-hmm. And we just sit in a long table to enjoy brunch and have a conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something I want to continue travel and explore, is to see what an event-based exhibition can be like. Yeah.
Great. So what are some of the things that you're doing in the future? Like, what do you hope to see?
I recently wanted to continue my past project and just expand it. Yeah, and I've been wanting to bring these projects. A lot of artists I work with are local, like Miami-based. Yeah. I want to bring them to other cities. Yeah, I had a project in Tampa earlier last year called Unfold, featuring two artists based in Miami and one artist based in Chicago, where we explore what exhibition text can be. So it's a lot
What does that mean?
Yeah, so I was thinking about, I participate in an online workshop hosted by an art library project based in Chicago called Chukimarka. Mm-hmm. And they have this art critique writing program called Munia. And it's like five of the art writers or curators gather together. We will meet every 2 weeks online. And just talking about what art writing means to us, and we will check out each other's work and review each other's writing. So through that project, it's very inspiring for me to think about, okay, so as a curator, art writing for me is writing exhibition text. Yeah, sometimes I do like interview writings and things, but my focus a lot is like, how do I transfer these abstracts or more conceptual thoughts I have in my head about a show that I want to present visually into something like readable, and how can I deliver this idea better in words? Yeah, so that was a time now I'm a lot better. I struggle a lot earlier when I started, because I think language barrier also could be challenging. And but yeah, that workshop got me thinking, okay, maybe I should do an exhibition about how wall text or how exhibition text can be. And I met a good friend, Cristobal Alde, who is also a curator and art writer based in Chicago. And his practice is mainly is focusing on how to use creative writing in an approach to exhibition text. So instead of maybe just writing critics directly, he would write poems using poetry as a way of expressing. So it could be very abstract, and while the text itself become part of the art. Yeah, so I found that very interesting. So we start brainstorming together and do a collaborative project. I work with two artists based in Miami that their work are heavily influenced by literature. Jose Luis Garcia and Amanda Rinares. So we propose a work together where I combine all of us to and Cristobal dedicated and write poems with the connection between Amanda and Jose's work. Yeah, so we debut this project. It's a smaller scale too, just to test it out how it is. We have like wall vinyls and we have scrolls as exhibition text. So there is no really wall labels. Yeah, it's kind of way I want to try to experiment how people take from purely just visual or something. Even the text is there, but more abstract.
So help me understand, like, visually, is it a visual experience?
Yes, it's a visual experience. So it's still a small exhibition on view.
Okay.
But they are very limited about on text. Mm. I eventually still do like a QR code about a page on how this project comes together, my approach. I think it is necessary to still address that. But like for experiencing the show, I don't want a label or a block of wall vinyl text to block that. So everything that's presenting or everything that's text-based about the show is show through poetry. Yeah. And I was very fortunate to got an opportunity to show at the Visual Arts Gallery in Miami Beach that same September last year.
Nice.
So I brought that project back and include two more artists from Chicago and Miami as well. So I figure that is really nice, because every time I can think about my more experimental projects and I include more and I can grow more and it becomes more mature. So that is something in the future I want to continue do this Unfold specifically and the dinner party to see how they can shift or expand in other cities and include more artists. Yeah.
It might be a difficult question to answer, but who's your favorite artist?
Oh, it's very difficult to answer.
Name three of your favorites.
My favorite. Oh, I don't know.
We'll come back to that.
I would say that there is an art critic and writer that I look up to very much. His name is Terry Smith. He's an Australian scholar, art historian, and published several books on contemporary art curating. And I was so lucky to be able to meet him in person when I went to Louisville, Kentucky for a conference hosted by the IKT. It's a contemporary curator group that originated from Europe, but they did all the symposiums once a year. In 2022, it was at Kentucky.
Okay.
And at first I was like, I don't know, I've never traveled to Kentucky, and yeah. I was curious, so I was like, I want to go check it out. So it turned out to be an amazing experience. Like, it's a total different art scene.
Yeah.
They have a lot of great, we went to the Josephine Sculpture Park, 21C Museum's owners on private home. They have a lot of amazing private collections and good foundation that's supporting the art community. And I was able to meet Terry there. He's one of the keynote speaker at the time.
Yeah,
so he published, he have influenced a lot of my curatorial thinking. I remember what he said is like, exhibit arts work. So you're exhibiting arts work, not art, just artwork.
Okay.
Like once you're as an artist, you maybe want to deliver a specific idea or certain things that you want to speak through your artwork. But once that artwork is shown in public, you no longer really control that, right? Like what you want to say.
Right.
People have so many interpretations and the artwork speak for itself. Yeah, so I've always think about that when I'm picking, or not really picking, like maybe selections or my ideas. Like, I like to see the arts work. And there are artists that, yeah, I like their work and different things, but I will not like everything they make.
Mm-hmm.
Or as an artist, I'm sure, you know, through your career change or shift, you will develop different body of works as well. And that could totally doesn't look like anything of what you made 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some things that maybe in your path you've seen working with artists and you're just like, why do I keep coming across this? Like, maybe it's work habits or things that discourage a curator.
Discourage? Like,
or tricky things to work around because you know every artist is a little...
It's definitely not easy working with artists.
Yeah.
But I would say it's not easy working with people.
Good point.
There were times, I remember like my first museum job, I deal with artworks more. And old artworks, mostly of the artists were passed, right? And it was just a museum registration, caring for them, like making sure they're okay, mm-hmm. temperature control, and it's so peaceful. Like you don't deal with, at the time I don't deal with anybody but mm-hmm. artworks.
Yeah.
And that's a great time. Because
you'd rather deal with
the artwork doesn't betray you. But yeah, but it lacks certain excitement. And I love working with artists, and especially mm-hmm. conversation like this, or you know, over studio visit. Sometimes studio visits, you end up not talking anything about art, but talking about just
life.
People, life. Yeah. Become a therapy session for both you and I. And that's what I really like. And I feel like having that connection with people is where really art starts to develop.
And it's where it ends too, right? Like you have conversations today at Spinello Gallery or the Spinello Projects. To potential buyers of it, right? So you're dealing with the artist on one hand of your practice and then eventually speaking to people that might be purchasing the work, right?
Yeah, definitely. We're in a commercial, I would say like our world involves different little world and universe in it. So a lot of time like in the academic art world or being an artist and working in an art market, it's like really, they are very codependent, but they could be also a completely different circle. Yeah, there was an amazing book that Helmi really understands, and it's a fun read. It's called 7 Days in the Art World, and it talks about different aspects in the art world in general from MFA, like our academic world when we're still in school, our seminar classes, to art fairs, and then to art auctions, and to biennial, like mega museum art and also museum shows. So institutions, galleries, fairs, auction houses, or back to grad schools and, you know, focusing on visual arts, they're so connected, but yet completely different. Yeah, I've learned through so much in my current job at Spinello Projects. Just really seeing how and learning how to navigate in between these. And sometimes you put on different, you wear many different hats, you put on different, I don't want to say personas, but in different situation or different circumstances, you understand or how to talk to people. Yeah, I was like, getting people skills is really what I've learned so much here. Yeah.
Right. I'm curious to know, is there a difference in your world from like maybe art with a capital A versus art with a lowercase a, or like the people that they don't really care about what the end game is of their work. They're just in, they make work because they have to, they make paintings or whatever their medium is. They just do it every day of their life.
Yeah.
Just cause it's part of, it's their soul, you know?
Yeah.
Versus the people with degrees and the, you know, very.
I figure, well, through, I've been in our world since I was very young. My family, especially my dad, he works as a full-time editor in newspaper.
Okay.
But he has always had a passion in teaching art. He's a self-taught artist since he was a kid. Since he's a kid.
So it's part of
and
your
it's been part life. Of my life. And we have this weekend little studio, like teach kids how to draw, like from age 5 to 12. So I grew up in a studio, and I'd attend special classes for like, I would say like for US, that would be like AP classes for art school since middle school. So I would dedicate 8 hours a week in school to do all kinds of mediums. So I was trained traditionally to do painting, charcoal painting, Chinese painting, calligraphy, you know, watercolor. Like I was able to touch base a lot of different mediums. And so like being surrounded by a lot of different art people and also growing up and attending universities and seeing people that want to choose art as their lifelong career. For me, now I've learned is like choosing art is not just a career. You can also work something else, but you know, graduating from art, I can work in different fields.
Sure.
But I think choosing art is actually choosing an attitude or a lifestyle. Yeah, a lot of artists take it very, of course, I totally admire that. You know, you're dedicated, you need to make something. But I figure that that's a lifestyle you choose. It's more than just a career or a simple job. Yeah.
Did you read Rick Rubin's book?
No.
No, not yet. Okay.
I love the recommendation list. I have a long list of things I want to read.
Great, yeah.
Yeah.
You know Rick Rubin? He's a music producer.
Okay.
He's like... he's produced, I don't even think he knows how to record.
Oh, wow.
Like he doesn't know how to touch the button, like maneuver the buttons and, or even play instruments. I might be wrong on that regard, but he has an ability to sit in the room with artists, musicians, and find the truth in what they're trying to get out. So he's recorded from, you know, Johnny Cash or Metallica or Justin Bieber,
wow.
Like everybody, you know, I think Imagine Dragons. The list is long.
Yeah.
The Beastie Boys. Do you know the Beastie Boys?
I think so.
It's old school.
When I was in middle school, I think I might have heard it.
Anyways, I brought it up because of it's like a philosophy, his way. His book is called something like The Creative Act, The Way of Being.
Okay.
And
I think I literally just downloaded that audiobook.
Right on. It's a slow. I listen to the.
It's
audio.
Like a gray cover with a. Yes, I. Yeah. I think I finished chapter one.
It's tough. It's really good to read, and I'm not a big reader, but the audio, if I'm honest, put me to sleep.
I think it was very subtle, like a very ASMR type
100%.
Of reading. So yeah, I thought about, I want to read because I came across it somewhere when I was studying books and books one day when it just came out. Yeah, I was like, I want to read this, but I also figure that right now, because of phones and stuff, I don't know if you noticed, like my, at least for personally, I have a very short attention span compared to what I used to be.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
So I was like, okay, let me try audiobook. But I totally get it. It was too calm.
I agree. But there's so much wisdom in that book. It's like all my friends and I don't know, it's magical stuff.
Yeah. Also, you mentioned that, you know, going to art school and stuff. Something that I've learned is that I think art school helped you certain extent to be a good artist. But also it really depends what you mean by being a good artist. I think there's no right definition. And what is good art, right? That's sometimes we just like, yeah, I just know, or we just know. But I think for art school, it helps you become a good artist because it helps you with connection. That you find your community or your people easier. Yeah, but not necessarily, I think, help, at least personally, my practice, I would say.
Like the technical aspects.
Technical, you have to learn through making things or really being your own projects. And making art is scary.
It is.
Yeah.
And then having the courage to show it in front of people. But that's why I was asking about, in your experience working with artists in general, I'm always curious, like, there was a Miami artist from Overton.
Overton?
Purvis Young. It's been a while since I've talked about that, but I mean, that would be one person as an example of it. Maybe they made art, they made paintings and sculptures because they needed to, period. Like they just had to, it was in their body. I find I'm always attracted to those artists, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Like you make art because you have to.
Yeah. There's another Miami artist named Wayne Whittlesey who didn't get much notoriety, but he drew every day. And he had cerebral palsy, so he had a lot of complications revolving around his ability to make the work. And I was attracted to his sensibilities and his desire to make work. But I can cut that stuff out. But I'm trying to draw a thread between somehow like the curatorial livelihood and engaging with the artists.
I think there are so many different types of ways of thinking, I think, as a curator.
Yeah.
It's not until these past 30 years it really become a thing. Before that, we're just like, you know, in the museum, you're like taking care of the archives and people really, it's like part in the realm, part of art history or museum world. But I think like being an independent curator really became a thing like fairly recently. And everybody can be a curator and it's like selecting thing, or you're, what is that called? Like when you're like an agent where you spot like future stars, what's that called in English?
Oh no, I don't know.
Like a star.
What do you say in your language?
Like xingtan.
Okay.
Like you like.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, xingtan, actually, it's a beautiful translation. It means like star seeker.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So you're finding that next big star. Or finding people that you believe in their talent.
Maybe a scout. They use that in sports. Like you scout out talent.
Scout out talents. Yeah, I think for me, you will serve as like a hub for an information where you gather. You have all these artists, and then I've also noticed a lot of artists having troubles really to like help themselves get out there. And for me,
what advice do you give to them?
Well, I think a lot of times, like, it's very difficult as an artist yourself to be everything, right? Because to be out there, or you want to, quote, to be, like, successful, it's more than just about artworks. There's millions of talents. But how do you present that great part of you to the people out there? Of course, like, social media. How do you program yourself? How do you present yourself? So sometimes I think now, especially now, being an artist, it's more than just being in studios. Like, you are your own manager. You are your own administrator. You are your own grant writer.
Accountant.
Nobody.
Dishwasher.
Exactly. You have to be everything. So I think right now, like, working with the right people, or finding people that can help you out, or using social media as a good platform, it's part of a very important skill if you want to be a full-time or pursue art as a career. And that is what I found a little bit lack in being in art school, because you expect to learn all of these in art and business, right? And it's really interesting. I've been having these conversations a lot these days. Is why is it like we're so afraid of talking about money in art school? Like, it's like something that a taboo that we should not speak about. But when you graduate, you realize that, yeah, it is, like, how do you sell your artwork? How do I file my own tax as a creative individual? Everything, it's about, like, how do you better connect with reality? And, but yet, this, I think there's a gap in between mm-hmm. being the art school and being having art as a career. Yeah, and seeing it as your business. Yeah, there's always a balance, I think. Different people have a different way of approaching it. Yeah. So I forgot how we led to this part, but
it's all good. What's it like being a curator in Miami?
It's a great community to be in. Mm-hmm. I have this as a curator. There are a lot
it's
of
diverse.
It's very diverse. It's fast growing. There are artists from everywhere in different places. Also, we are like very close to New York. Mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, Miami and New York, we're kind of like a 2-hour flight away, Brooklyn, somehow. Yeah.
And it's only like $100 or something
like
that. I know,
or right? Like, I don't know, I'm going on Spirit, or it's like ridiculously cheap to go and accessible. So that's what I appreciate, is that you'd be able to actually interact with a lot of different artists here. There are always like talents or gems like to find as a curator. I think the only problems that I found, or not a problem, but challenging things that I found being an independent curator in Miami, is to a place to show. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, real estate or vacant places or places that's accessible to our community is very, very limited here. Very expensive. A lot of things are occupied by big corporations. There are just not that many, I would say, like artist-run spaces, alternative spaces that for even younger emerging artists or independent curator like me to showcase or propose our projects.
How do you find artists? What's your go-to?
My main source is Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always looking on different people. And a lot of time is through artist friends. Like people, you know, you share your friend's story, or when I work with somebody, they will be like, hey, you should check them out. And that's how I connect with the majority of my artists, because of a mutual friend that I know. And, you know, with Zoom and FaceTime, you, even if they're not based in Miami, you can be able to still do an online visit and to just have a list for future projects that you want to work together.
What about the locations? How do you find locations to show the work once you have a stable of artists?
Yeah, I've always had proposals kind of in my head or already in text. A lot of ways I found through venues is now through open calls, or if I were to like obtain a grant or some fundings, I might be able to rent out a space. But right now it's really through open calls, where they have a small budget for smaller projects, like as I proposed, and I'll be able to use like a exhibition space for a couple of weeks for free. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's also like pretty demanding of my time. You really have to continue submitting, and
lots of denials.
Like you probably get like 2 out of 50 or even less, and that's like continuing submitting. Yeah. But yeah, you know, it happens, and you just gotta never give up. Yeah, so that's my main source and places in Miami to show. I hope, you know, later on as our community here continue to grow, we will have more places. Yeah.
Right on. Well, thank you for spending some time with me.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. You have a wild story, and it's great to hear you talk about it. So thanks.
Thank you for taking your time with me.